And I'm so happy to have on the phone Peter Cater. Peter is an inspiration, and he has been providing inspiration through his music for so many years now. I believe your first collaboration with Carlos Nakai was in, 1992? And you're going to have a reunions of sorts here in Sedona on October 29th at Lisa Dahl's beautiful Mariposa restaurant. It's a Thursday evening there, the 29th. Is that going to be a wonderful combination, the two of the most wonderful inspirational musicians together? Are you excited about that, Peter?
Well, yeah, I love playing with our Carlos. I always look forward to it. I mean, we've been playing together on and off since 1989, I think.
Wow.
So
you've really brought so much.
Hanging out with an old friend. What's that?
Well, it is like what you've done is really brought a lot of awareness to people about Native Americans, because the two of you together really brought you to get the prestigious Environmental Leadership Award from the United Nations. And I know Carlos was also awarded from Arizona an award for his work that he's done. And he was inducted into the Arizona Music Entertainment Hall of Fame. So very exciting that you're going to be playing there at that beautiful Mariposa restaurant. You're going to love that restaurant, Peter.
Yeah, is the food good?
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous spot. I mean, you know what? We all love those beautiful red rocks, and it's got the most fantastic view. And it's it was just finished a few months back. And so it's the most gorgeous facility. The large windows, and it's just awesome. So
I think it'll be our first time playing at a restaurant, but it's supposed to be like a real nice concert setting after people eat or something like that. I'm not really sure about the details, actually.
Well, you know, this is their very first in the series of Live at Mariposa, so you're kind of kicking it off, so that's kind of nice. But I did want to talk to you about, your newest release, Love, is just so beautiful.
Thank you.
It's a little different than some of your other CDs, isn't it?
Well, you know, what's funny is that I'm a piano player, obviously, and the Love CD for me is about as close to home as it gets. You know, I mean, that's just me playing the piano. But because it's so close to home, I tend to want to do other things a lot. And because of that, I think in my entire career, I've only released like 3 or maybe 4 solo piano CDs.
Wow, that's
funny.
And
this is the first one since I released my, it's called Piano. It came out, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So for me, it's very much like, oh, it's piano, you know, it's kind of like what I do. But I guess I can see that for other people, they're used to hearing me, you know, in collaborations or, you know, do other kinds of things. It seems different.
Well, you know, you do so many wonderful spiritual releases that are really just awesome. Really very, very uplifting. And you've gotten, is it 9 or 10 Grammy nominations?
10.
10 Grammy nominations, my gosh, and kind of the leader in the new age music. But this particular release, Love, it has a lot of personal emotion. It has, I mean, a lot of intimacy that's a little different than some of your other spiritual releases.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Like, so you're saying that some of my other records deal more with kind of like humanity and spirituality and kind of connecting to, you know, the universe or God or something like that. This one's more personal. This is more about me and intimacy and relationships. And yeah, it's true.
I mean, I really feel when I'm listening to Love, which just blows me away, that there is, that you're almost in a room listening to someone play for you. Like you really are literally having someone play piano for you. And it's got such passion to it. That's very interesting to listen to, because I mean, that kind of passion on piano is I have to say, I kind of flash back into Rachmaninoff or some of those passionate Russian composers that would play. Do you understand what I'm saying at all, Peter?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I can get kind of dramatic.
Well, I mean, but it feels real. It's not just drama for drama's sake, you know, because classical piano can sometimes get lost in the technicality or the need to prove the technical ability of the pianist, I feel sometimes, you know, or the composer. But this one really is pure heart and really pure emotion, I feel, you know. I mean, it and it's lovely. So, I mean, what were you going through that brought up this kind of this very personal emotion?
Well, all the songs on the record are wrote for, you know, my partner at the time. And so they're all like love songs, and they're all not like love songs like, oh, I love you so much love songs. They're love songs like, you know, this is what we're going through right now kind of love songs, you know, which is not always comfortable. So there's a few songs on there that are a little more sort of in the turmoil of, you know, deep feelings and kind of confusing aspects and energies that happen in relationships sometimes. And, you know, some of the songs were recorded, they're improvisational, and they were recorded with, you know, with my partner or lover, you know, like lying under the piano.
Well, that is intimate. That is
that's pretty intimate, right?
That's pretty intimate.
You know, or just having had some sort of a really intimate encounter of some kind, you know. So.
And it comes across that way. I mean, it is the kind of thing. I mean, that's what I was catching, I guess, you know, when I was listening and going, wow. I mean, it just drew me in because it's like, wow, this is really very intensely real. I mean, it sounds like it did feel like it was happening in the moment. Do you feel, because you've owned studios and you've moved a lot too. I'll tell you, Peter, you've moved a lot.
I know.
But, and you've had really great studios. What was it like for this one? I mean, because you were doing this in your home. Was your home a studio? Kind of, you have a studio in your home?
Yeah, it's my home studio. I got, you know, my grand piano, and I've recorded all my last 15 or I don't know how many records, maybe 20 records myself in my home studio, and mixed them myself, and all my Grammy nominated CDs I engineered and mixed myself. And
wow.
So I'm pretty comfortable with it at this point. You know, I've been doing it my whole life, and I really started enjoying it when I got all the other engineers out of the picture. I mean, no disrespect to the talented people that I worked with in the past, but when it got to the place where I could actually just make things sound exactly the way I wanted them to sound without having to ask someone to try to help get me there, is when I feel like my music really started becoming much more exciting for me, because I don't know if you've been in the studio. I mean, you know what it's like, you know, you find yourself, like, say to the engineer, like, hey, you know, I really want to hear more bass on this song. And then the engineer says, well, I think there's enough bass there.
You know, sometimes, and it just occurred to me as you were talking, sometimes, and I don't know if you understand, but for women out there, they'll understand. It's sometimes like you go to a hairdresser and you say, "Don't cut too much hair off, please," and then you come out of the hairdresser and your hair is 6 inches short, and going,
"Yeah, it's
wait a second, no, I said not to cut too much off, please." You know,
yeah. And it's like, it's just like that. If you could cut your hair and or color your hair exactly the way you want it, you would be so much happier than trying to communicate that to a hairstylist and hoping for the best, right?
Well, because it is, you know, I mean, sometimes it's so much work, and you're lucky that you have the access to your home studio and know how to do it, because there is a lot of technical parts to it, and it's always changing. It's not like you can just learn to mix and master, because there's always new things, better things, more things.
God.
Right?
The learning curve is ridiculous.
Right.
It keeps on curving.
Yes, it does.
You know, you think that you went from analog to digital, and then you kind of survived the curve. But, you know, with digital, they're doing upgrades and changes like every 6 months to a year. You're having to, you know, add more depth to your understanding. It's kind of annoying, actually. I wish that they would just not do all the updates so fast.
Well, it's the way they make money, of course. You know, I mean, you always have to buy new and more and better. And I mean, of course, everyone's excited, but I don't know how much, you know.
I mean,
it's a lot of work. And that's why it's wonderful to have an engineer or you know, a person who can mix and master is exactly the way you want it. But most people don't have the time to be able to, or the luxury to be able to say, I can do this myself. Because it is a lot of time and learning and work to do that. So, that's wonderful on your part. Good for you that you have the dedication and passion for your music that you can go ahead and give it all that you've got and do it yourself and make it your own. I mean, so it really is a personal expression with it. It's coming purely from you.
Yeah, it is. It's very personal, very intimate, and that's the way I like it, actually. I'm very private in my personal life, and I'm very private around my creative process, too. So I really enjoy kind of immersing myself in it and, you know, finishing it so that I'm happy with it. And then I like to share it, but I'm not that crazy about sharing it while I'm in process. You know, so it's...
The creative process is a very fragile, interesting thing.
It is. It's very delicate, and we're so easily influenced, you know, and it's so hard sometimes to hold on to that initial thread of inspiration.
Yep.
You know, and because we're wanting to please people. We're wanting to be liked.
Yes.
You know, we're wanting approval. You know,
yep.
Human beings want approval, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're in the studio and you have this idea, but then, you know, the engineer or the other musician or the assistant, you can kind of feel like they're not really excited about it the way you are. Then you kind of wonder, well, what's going on? And then next thing you know, you're trying to please the people in the room.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very, very true point. And I mean, I have gone through this and I know exactly what you're saying. And you have to honor yourself. And it's very hard sometimes to set those boundaries and be able to say yes or no and honor that creative process, which, I mean, I guess you learned that because it's not any easy feat to put out as many CDs as you have. How many CDs do you have out now, Peter?
I don't know. It's over 50.
Oh, my gosh.
60, I don't really know.
Is it really over 50?
I've been doing it for over 30 years. I mean, I know.
That's still a lot. I mean, you know, I can't even imagine putting out a CD a year. I really can't. I mean, again, I guess that's the value of having your own studio. But, I mean, if you had to go into someone else's studio, it'd be very, very expensive and time. It'd be very almost impossible to do that amount of CDs.
Yeah, it is. If you're not doing it yourself, it's almost impossible, you know. But I'm always like, there's so many things that I want to do, you know. It's like I feel like I want to collaborate with this person. I want to do this kind of project. And then I get called to write a score for a TV thing or a film. And then I want to release that. And, you know.
How do you set your priorities? I mean, because I know what you're saying, because I get all these inspirations. And sometimes I have, like, you know, three lined up. And then, you know, like, for next year, I haven't even decided which one I'm going to put first. Because I really want, there's one I have halfway done that I want to do, another one that's about a quarter of the way done, and going, I don't, you know, I mean, it's like, wow, what am I going to do first? How do you set your intention and priorities on what you are going to be doing?
Well, it's just recently come to the place where I actually do feel like I'm over committing myself in a way, and I need to kind of prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly, I'm just learning how to do that, because normally I just do whatever I want, and most of the time I do record, you know, two or three CDs a year, and I'm feeling like that's a bit too much, and I'm actually being offered more work than that from different labels and stuff, and I feel like I need to figure out how to say no.
Well,
or something, I don't know.
Well, you know, and it's not just the making of the CD and putting it out. It's the follow-up work that takes a lot of time. Actually, sometimes it's the hardest part. But you do have help in promotion and stuff. But that, I know it's time for Grammy consideration, and you have Love In for a Grammy consideration.
Right.
But that's a huge amount. I mean, that's a huge amount of work. And when you get to that stage as well.
Yeah. Well, all that stuff, and any process of trying to get your music out there to be heard and to a select group of people takes a lot of work.
So when you do this and you still have to play, I mean, you know, that is, it's interesting because you have a huge audience already set up. So I think you're very, very one of the few people in the New Age field. And I mean, I'd say maybe out of 5 or 10% of people in the New Age field that really are successful at trying to get their music sold and actually having people buy it, because there's a lot of people doing new age, but, you know, as you see, I mean, there's a lot less people buying music than it seems it used to be. Are you seeing seeing the difference with the times changing as far as people buying CDs, or is it just single downloads, or what are you selling most of right now?
Everyone saw that difference. You know, I mean, I guess it was like, what, 15 years ago when the CD market basically crashed. I mean, every artist that I know went from, you know, their CD sales dropped by 80% within, wow, like 3 years. I mean, you know, as soon as MP3s came out and the ability for people to download their favorite song rather than buy the whole CD, you know, then everything shifted dramatically. And then there was a period of like, oh my God, how can we survive as artists when we're not selling, you know, a fraction of the CDs we used to sell? So then a lot of people, you know, started focusing more on concerts, which is, you know, obviously a really good thing to do. But what's happened since then is the whole, the music usage thing. Like, I have a really large catalog. I've written, you know, almost 1,000 songs.
Wow.
And so I have a, you know, large catalog of music out there that's circulating around television and film and cable and, you know, the internet and YouTube and, you know, now Pandora and Spotify and, you know, all the streaming and stuff. And there's a lot of new organizations out there that are collecting money for artists, for streaming, and for any kind of music usage anywhere on the internet or anywhere in the world. And so, you know, that gap that happened for about 5 or 10 years with the loss of CD sales, it's kind of being filled in gradually with income revenue from streaming and any kind of media usage.
Are you getting played a lot in European countries as well?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I get a lot of airplay in Europe and Asia. You know, it's a trickling effect. I mean, my theory is, like, you know, you do anything consistent enough and long enough with enough, you know, focus and passion and, you know, it'll turn around. It'll come around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of the problem I think that people have is that they have plan B. You know, mm-hmm. And they figure, well, I'm gonna try this music thing, and then, you know, but if it doesn't work out, I've got plan B. And, well, you know, good luck with that, because it's not going to work out as fast as you want it to, and there's going to be rough times along the way. And everyone that I've seen that had plan B went for plan B.
Wow.
You know, eventually, whether it was after 2 years or 5 years or 15 years.
Wow.
And I never had plan B. There's really nothing else that I know how to do. I didn't have anything else to fall back on. So
that's very good advice, you know. And it's not the kind of advice you'd ever hear usually. Usually everyone says, oh, you know, got to be smart, do what you want to do, but have a plan B. So this is really interesting that you're saying don't have it and just do what you really want to do without falling back on the comfort zone. So, I mean, you're right there doing what you want to do. I mean, spiritually, you do have very enlightened music, and I mean, you can just tell from just the titles alone, let alone the music, that you have a spiritual background. I mean, has that really been one of the major influences in your life as well?
I would have to say yes, because that was a big part of where my music kind of came out of, was sort of my spiritual, you know, search, or whatever you want to call it, or curiosity, or need, or desire, you know, or crisis, whatever you want to call it. Ever since I was in, you know, my late teens and early 20s, I was all about, you know, doing retreats and fasting and meditating and, you know, trying to figure out what it is that we're doing here on the planet, because it sure didn't seem like it was making sense to me to go down the kind of the normal road that a lot of people seem to go down. And fortunately, I always had my music as a way of expressing whatever I was going through. So,
and it's interesting, because some people, again, if they had a plan B, may not have gone as far out on a limb of really doing some of the deeper spiritual releases that you did, because
or inquiry, you know, even the inquiry. Because face it, just to throw a generalization out there, when times get tough, people start looking for help. They start looking for, quote, God, unquote, or mm-hmm. they look for, you know, just some, you know, some wise man or some wise woman or some, you know, something to hold on to. And so if you're going through your life and, you know, things aren't working out and you don't have plan B, you know, then it kind of throws you more into like a deeper inquiry and search for something of true substance to hold on to, you know, inside yourself. And I think that that's, I feel like I'm off on a tangent now.
Well, it's a spiritual influence. And I think at some point when you open that door and make that inner connection, I mean, that is the same connection that you make inside, that I think where music comes from as well, from me. That source, the creative force, is also the place where there's universal music. And once you tap into that, it's an amazing source of inspiration as well.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, like one of the sources, one of the, you know, it's like, where else are you going to go for inspiration?
Yeah, you know, it's but a lot of people have problems, and you seem to have really worked so well with this, on being able to tap into that, use it and create it, and then manage it and handle all the parts that go with it, because there's a lot of the details that sometimes can be lost when you're in a spiritual place. And there is, you know, there's a lot of details you have to take care of, especially when you're mixing and mastering and doing some of the detail work of creating and everything. So I mean, it's really wonderful that you're kind of setting an example, which I think you are, because you've been doing it longer than a lot of the people in the New Age field. And you certainly have, if you're 50 albums, you certainly have the volume of music out there. And it is nice that this, coming up October 29th at the Mariposa, a beautiful restaurant of Lisa Dahl's, it is going to, just so people know, it's a dinner and show. So you get a fabulous, fabulous four-course dinner. It's just going to be top-of-the-line food there and in a lovely, lovely setting. And you get this music. But you also have the magic, because, you know, there is a magic in Sedona. And there is there's a power there. You know, I mean, I adore Sedona. And I always feel, if I get out hiking and I go to the rocks, I immediately feel some energy, and I feel transformed by the power of Sedona.
I agree. Those vortexes are for real.
They are, and maybe not in the way people say, but I mean, you feel the energy. And
yeah, you do.
And when you're out there with Carlos Nakai, my gosh, I mean, he is, he's tapped into it as well. He definitely is. And when you're doing music with Carlos, like this, when you do this concert, do you improvise in a concert? Do you try to stick to the creations you've done? Or what happens musically? How do you decide what you're going to be doing?
Well, for the most part, when our Carlos and I get together, we never discuss what we're going to do. And we just do improvise. Occasionally we'll like spontaneously fall back on a theme. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was one of my alarms going off.
Oh, okay.
It was reminding me to pick up my son from school.
Uh-oh.
No, I got a few minutes. But yeah, we just pick up on some themes occasionally from, you know, some songs that we recorded in the past, but mostly we just love to improvise. And, you know, we connect into that, you know, if you want to call it spiritual, we connect into that very present, energetic space of just being in the moment, of being present with each other, you know. And we do a lot of deep listening, and we're patient, and we're not in a hurry to, quote, be creative, unquote. You know, we're just hanging out there together, listening to each other and having a conversation through our instruments. And it's really enjoyable, you know. And mm-hmm. An hour and a half will go by, it seems like about 15 minutes.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because people sometimes ask me when I do interviews, you know, do you do questions, or what are the questions going to be? And I say never. I never write up a list of questions, because when I am talking to someone, I like spirit to come in, or I like whatever's on both of our minds to happen. And if you ask a set list of questions, then you're taken away from what could be happening in the moment. And when you have a conversation with music, which really great conversation can happen with improvised music, and happens with you and Carlos, when that happens, you are literally speaking a universal language that anyone can understand. And when you tap into that, you're going beyond the words. You're really, you are in, because spirit doesn't really have necessarily or can get lost in translation with words. But when you're doing a musical translation in conversation, then there's a higher level of energy that I really believe comes in.
Yes, I totally agree.
And you know what? You each can lift each other up as well. And then everyone who's listening can be lifted up by what you're doing as well when there's that kind of connection.
Absolutely. If the artist is not, you know, in the moment and being lifted and having a good time, then neither is the audience, I don't think.
Well, that's what made some of the great music, you know, like when Carlos Santana plays, or when there was, even going back to the Grateful Dead, or some great live musicians, was because that was the improvisation that was usually happening that kind of brought
that
magic.
And people feel it. It resonates in them, right? They go, oh, my God, something fresh, something new, something like, you know, totally, you know, out of the box is happening right now, you know, and it's contagious.
What's the best website for people to go to get your information, get your music downloaded, and what's the best site for people to go to?
Well, our Carlos and I have our own sites. I mean, my site is under my name, Peter Cater, and our Carlos is, I'm pretty sure, is either our Carlos Nakai or Native American Flute Music. I forget. But, you know, we're easy to find everywhere, anywhere there's music sold, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful, and it's the kind of music, truthfully, that I love playing, and that really, for me, soothes the spirits. It quiets the mind. It's the kind of music that KUOS FM, you know, wants to pattern itself after, because we're a metaphysical organization that's trying to do inspirational music to lift the spirit and the soul, and to bring a smile and calm and peace to people's minds, and with no negativity, only positivity. And so kind of trying to do something that is a combination of something that's really never been done before at the same time, because most New Age or jazz isn't just spiritual, and we're trying to do the spiritual aspect of music. So we love playing your music on our radio station.
Thanks. I'm glad that I can be a part of that.
Well, we are too, and I really do want to have people check out. You can go to Mariposa, Lisa Dahl's site, Mariposa Restaurant, and check out under events, live at Mariposa event that's happening Thursday.
I'm looking at the poster right now. It says visit MariposaSedona.com to purchase
Show
tickets.
Perfect. Mariposa.com?
Sedona. MariposaSedona.com.
MariposaSedona.com. Perfect for the event on the 29th. It's going to be memorable, a really, truly memorable, magical night of music and dining and just pure spirit as well. So I'm just loving it that you're doing it. And I wish you the best of luck on Love for Grammy consideration up in New Age category.
Thank you.
I feel we're going to get another nomination here. It'll probably be nomination number 11 coming up this next year. So good luck on that. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And just a big mahalo and for the work and energy and the inspirational music that you continue to really supply to the world.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I look forward to talking to you again and see you over on Maui or Sedona or wherever.
Bouncing back and forth. Life is tough. Someone's got to do it. Either Sedona or Maui. You know, how blessed am I? And you. So thank you and have a blessed day, okay?
Okay, you too.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.